Back into the slot. Sandy Harf is on it and they score. Cornell has increased the lead to two.
Malott shooting, he scores.
Here's Caldas, a shot, score! Yanni Caldas!
O'Neal, Dullemeyer, stop, shoots, and scores! Preston O'Neal!
And Vanderlyn drives the front, shooting, he scores!
Good evening, hockey fans, and welcome to episode 7 of the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast, a Cornell hockey podcast brought to you by the Cornell Daily Sun. My name is Zach Silver, senior editor on the Cornell Daily Sun, covering the men's hockey team, joined by Rafi Gendler, assistant sports editor, soon to be sports editor on the Cornell Daily Sun. And we are broadcasting for you from a snowy Ithaca, New York on this Tuesday evening from the beautiful Catherwood Library. Rafi, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Episode 7. This is like a real thing now.
Yeah, well, back into the weekly swing of things. Hopefully we can keep it going. We're kind of diving into the home stretch of the season, so maybe not too hard. Maybe not too many episodes left. Maybe some bonus episodes. Who knows? We'll figure it out.
Playoff special, anybody?
Playoff special, playoff preview, playoff recap, maybe post-game quick thoughts. That could be fun.
Yeah.
You know, they do that at the Daily Orange. It's pretty good. They call it like the...
Our upstate rivals.
Yes. Our upstate examples, I like to say. Well, we're coming to you this week after Cornell men's hockey completed a weekend sweep of number 9/10 Clarkson and last place St. Lawrence. Two games, two wins, a 5-0 win on Friday over Clarkson, and a closer 3-1 win Saturday over St. Lawrence. Rafi, why don't you just start off, give us your takeaways, and what did you like out of the weekend, what didn't you like?
I liked the power play. Cornell scored 2 goals on the power play against Clarkson on Friday night, and then their first 2 goals in the first period against St. Lawrence Saturday night, also on the power play. Really just absolutely dominant, the Cornell power play at around 33% since December 1st.
Tops the nation.
Is best in the country by a pretty decent margin. Really just crazy good, especially the top unit, which features Cam Donaldson, Morgan Barron, and Mitch Vanderlyn, among others.
Yanni Caldas. Alex Green.
Well, Alex Green only recently.
Only recently.
Back from injury. Anyway, you know, we were talking today. It's more complicated than this, I know. But if I were an opposing team, I would put a defender right in the right circle, put him on Morgan Barron, and say, okay, somebody else has to beat us. Because a couple games recently, you know, Barron has gotten a pass from Caldas or Vanderlyn or somebody in the right circle, and then he bombs it, and it's a goal. It's a perfect setup. Now, the reason teams can't just do my simple formula and easily defend Barron is that there are 4 other good players there. You know, if I know Barron can shoot it from there, so do the UCAC coaches. You've got guys who can move the puck, who can make things happen on the left side. It leaves Barron open. It's easy, and the power play's really, really rolling.
Yeah, I agree. That was definitely a highlight of this weekend, even though Barron only had 1 goal, and was it a power play goal? Yeah, 1 power play goal on the weekend. Just to go off that, I thought the power play this weekend was really solid. Jeff Malott back in the lineup has been a real good presence for Cornell. Missed two separate stints of games this year with an injury, two different injuries. But also Michael Regish was a big staple on the power play this
4 of his 7 goals this year on the power play.
Four of the 7, which is the most power play goals by a Cornell rookie since none other than Riley Nash. 2011. Do we have to say? Should we be saying that? I know it's Sun Style, but do we have to say the class year in a podcast?
Oh, yeah, I might confuse people because the year he did the power play goals was 07-08 or something.
Right. So Brian Ferland, Riley Nash, who graduated in 2011, the last Cornell player that leads 4 power play goals
as a freshman.
But Regish had that beautiful his second goal, his first goal on the weekend. Against Clarkson, which made it 4-0. It was a beautiful goal in the power play.
It was an even strength goal. No, that was on the power play. Okay.
A turnover by Clarkson in the neutral zone. He pounces on it, takes 1 guy inside out, and then just tucks it between the legs of
somebody made Jake a nice Kiley. Pass off the wall. I don't remember who.
Yeah. So that was a beautiful goal for the Cornell power play. It's really been clicking. Just looking at the weekend in general, to take Clarkson, welcome into your home barn, and then just demolish them 5-0,
I thought. Yeah, that's a top 10 team, one of your top rivals atop the UCAC, and they They showed that very quickly, Cornell, that they were not messing around.
And this is a Cornell team that continues to battle injuries, continues to really just struggle when it comes to getting guys, enough guys into the lineup pretty much every night. Mm-hmm. You have some guys who purely are in the lineup just so Cornell can tout a full lineup. I mean, Zach Bramwell's maybe taking like three or four, you know, I don't want to sound too mean, but he hasn't been taking too many shifts when he's out in the lineup. You know, he's taking some more against St. Lawrence and in the later stages against Clarkson when they were had a big lead. You know, just to, or actually, no, he didn't play against Clarkson. Right. Just kind of trying and sharpen him up. But you know, going back to the power play, I like the puck movement a lot. It's gonna diminish maybe a little bit with Cam Donaldson no longer gonna be on there. He was injured in Saturday's game against St. Lawrence. Took a pretty bad fall in front of the St. Lawrence net. Landed on his arm, shoulder area, and was pretty much just went directly off the ice.
Right.
And, you know, we don't know exactly how long he'll be back. He's definitely out this coming weekend. You know, he'll maybe be back the weekend after that. Probably, I would guess not. I would guess it's probably going to be either saving for the postseason because they don't really, at this point, Cornell's pretty much a lock for a first round. Not a lock for first round. Pretty comfortable for a first round bye. Pretty comfortable for an NCAA bid. Although I'd argue they probably need to do well in the playoffs to keep that up. But yeah, before we go into Cam Donaldson too much, I just want to backtrack a little bit. Let's take a listen to what Yanni Caldas, one of the staples on the power plays, has to say about feeding Morgan Barron, a relationship I like to call the Nick Backstrom Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the shooter, and then, I mean, I've been more of a passer these last few years, so I think he gets open, and, I mean, he's got a bomb, so I just kind of try to put it in his wheelhouse, and he's been, you know, I like when he gives it back to me, too, sometimes, but, yeah, we'll let him shoot.
And that was Yanni Caldas on his cohesion and chemistry with Morgan Barron on the power play. A little bit of a joke there at the end about how he'd like to get some passes back, but you can't blame him. I think I remember listening to a video of his. He was interviewed by someone sometime, and he's a defenseman, but the guy asked him, would you rather score on a 2-on-1 or break up a 2-on-1? He said he'd rather score a 2-on-1.
100%. Oh, yeah, who wouldn't?
I don't know, maybe stay-at-home defenseman.
Yeah,
maybe Matt Nuttall would prefer to break up a 2-on-1.
Maybe so.
But let's talk a little bit more about Cam Donaldson, you know, maybe what his loss can do to Cornell, who's a team who's already lost so much at forward up to this point.
Yeah, it shakes everything up because he's the solid top-line guy with Locke and Barron, and he's such a staple on the power play. A part of what has made the power play look so easy for Barron is you've got Donaldson in the slot, and he's a threat there too. You know, teams tend to, you know, this is true in any sport with a basket, goal, or target. You defend the person closest to the hoop or net, right?
Not tonight's Harlem Globetrotters versus Washington Generals game.
Yeah, that's right.
There's not a lot of defense going on in that game.
Yeah, the Generals need to work on their rebounding.
The Harlem Globetrotters came to Ithaca tonight, if you have no idea what we're talking about.
It was a great game. The Globetrotters emerged victorious and a real barn burner.
I was pulling for the Generals, but I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon.
So it shakes up the top line. It shakes up the power play. It means Cornell has one fewer warm body, which at this point, you know, having 19... healthy skaters is no given. It'll be interesting to see what Mike Schaefer plans to do with the top line specifically going forward. He told us on Tuesday afternoon, you know, this weekend with all these injuries, the lines are just going to be because you have to have them on the sheet. They're not going to resemble any sort of actual plans.
Let's take a quick listen to what he has to say about the lines for this coming weekend against Brown and Yale.
Yeah, we'll keep, like, we're minus centers too, so it's tough to put Mike in there. Because Max is out, and so Mike's been playing a lot of center for us. So the game is going to represent a lot, like against St. Lawrence, where everybody's playing with everybody, and they'll play multiple positions all night long. And there'll be no set lines for this weekend whatsoever. Again, the thing is with our lines, even though we'll play multiple lines, I mean, it's pretty evident that our defensive ability on the road or at home, Kyle Betts, Bo Start, Brendan Locke, and it doesn't matter who they're playing with, you know, they're really, really solid defensively and offensively. But then you roll the group of defensemen out behind them. That's what gives you the balance to be able to play anybody with anybody because those three guys up front are so solid. And then you roll Mike, in and out of those spots just to keep them fresh. And so, you know, when guys are hurt, there's a lot about how to split the minutes up. Like power play is one place, and you know, penalty kill, who's killing penalties, and you know, so you got to kind of overall when you're looking at the game, you're trying to split those 60 minutes up evenly as much as possible. So when we play on the road, I'm never concerned that doesn't matter what lines against the other team's top line, they're you know, they'll do a great job against them, and they'll also be able to expose them there at top line defensively. So I think it's only the Colgate series that we've had that we lost that mentality, and since then we've done a tremendous job.
And that was head coach Mike Schaefer about, you know, what Cam Donaldson's injury might do, and to the lines especially. I'm just bummed to see, or not be able to see, the Donaldson, Locke, and Barron line continue to tear, because they've been so fun to watch. You know, they've kind of been a little bit streaky. They right out of the break, they were pretty much no one could stop them, and now it seems teams might be figuring them out a little bit. But, you know, at this point, it doesn't matter anymore because Donaldson's gone.
Yeah.
Schaefer mentioned that Michael Regish might be getting some of those minutes up
right,
there.
But then who plays? Then you only have three centers.
Right, so maybe we won't be seeing him up there. We'll see. I could see like a Noah Bald or a Jeff Malott maybe
yeah.
slot in there.
Yeah, I could see Malott or Mullen.
Oh, yeah, Tristan Mullen definitely. He's another sophomore. A lot of chemistry with those guys.
Back to the Donaldson injury, it really sucks to see him go down. It's related to the upper body injury problems he had last year, and he was really in and out of the lineup. He played a few games, pain management. Last year we saw so many flashes of, oh, this guy can really be an offensive weapon if he stays healthy. And then this season all signs were pointing toward, he was second on the team in goals. He's got 11 goals playing on that top line that was just on fire. So to see him go down, it really sucks for Cam.
Yeah, no, I was pulling for him this season. He was my, I think he was my scoring leader pick in the preseason picks.
He was my comeback player or breakout player.
Breakout player, yeah. There's a lot of options there. I mean, yeah, it's really tough for Cornell. I mean, I think we mentioned on the podcast last week, and we asked Schaefer about it today, but when Jeff Malott mentioned how he thought the team was going to be a scary team once everyone gets healthy,
yeah.
But people aren't getting healthy, which
this is the pessimist in me. I don't think we're going to see a fully healthy Cornell lineup.
I don't think we're going to see one all year.
No.
I mean, so let's talk about the other big injury this weekend, which came on Friday night instead of Saturday, where Cody Haskinen was taken to the boards on an icing race, ended up getting somehow, I don't even know how it happened, just really two guys going full speed and arms and limbs flying everywhere, ended up taking a skate from, I don't know if it was even his skate or the Clarkson skate, it's the Clarkson kid's skate, I don't know, it's not clear, I would imagine it was a Clarkson kid. Ended up just taking a skate to the arm, gets up, and immediately just you see all blood spewing out of his jersey and onto the ice. He got a pretty nasty laceration from someone's skate, and was immediately rushed to a hospital down in Sayre, Pennsylvania. Was underwent surgery, was back at the rink the next day, not playing, still getting tended to. Schaefer said on Tuesday that he was going to have another surgery either Wednesday or Thursday sometime this week to shore everything up. Schaefer said that it's probably going to be a couple weeks until they can even evaluate him.
Right.
I can't imagine he's going to be skating anytime soon. His upper body, so it doesn't affect his legs, but I feel like with just the amount of surgeries he had to undergo and the blood flow and everything, I think they'd be very cautious with him. And it could also be a thing like Cam where maybe they don't, if he is healthy, maybe just keep saving him for the playoffs.
Maybe, yeah.
But I would at this point, I'd be very surprised if we see him by ECACs.
Yeah, and like with Donaldson, this just really sucks. Haskinen was playing some of, Schaefer said the other day, he thought Haskinen was playing some of his best hockey. He had emerged, mostly due to necessity, due to injuries, as a solid top four defenseman, was starting to contribute offensively a little more. Two big losses in two big wins over
Huge.
The weekend.
And it doesn't help that Brendan Smith is still day-to-day with an upper body injury.
Right.
He was seen with his hand wrapped up the other day. But, it's just really... We started talking the other week about how they're finally getting healthy, and now
we jinxed it.
Basically back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
This has just been unfathomable of a season injury-wise.
Well, and Cornell has a three-point cushion atop the ECAC there.
Yeah.
Eighth in the pairwise as of earlier today, last night. Well, it must not have changed. It's a Tuesday.
Well, Harvard played last night.
Okay, so
and they won, so that would only
anyhow, help. They're in the top 10 in the pairwise. Your friend and mine, Brandon Thomas, tweeted a fun graphic today. Cornell has used 17 different combinations of skaters in 23 games. All of those changes, injury-related. You know, nobody's been in and out because, you know, coach's decision, take the night off.
Yeah, I don't think there's been one coach's decision, maybe the second or third game.
And there have only been two lineups or skater combinations that have been used more than twice.
Yeah.
Two of them have been used three times, so that's it. Like, looks like 13 combinations have been used once and only once.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. And, I mean, you know, let's go on to, I think we can go on to the next point about, you know, kind of the state of the ECAC is that even with all this stuff going on, even with Cornell seeing their All-American goalie out for a chunk of the year, not himself at the beginning of the year, even with, you know, breakout freshman Max Andreev missing pretty much the entire second half of the season, expectedly, with top 4D going down left and right, with freshmen playing places they're probably not used to, with Joe Leahy finally slotting in and now adapting
and looking
nicely.
Pretty good.
Looking pretty good. I mean, this has just been...
He's probably overtaken Cairns as
17,
D number 7.
19 skater.
Yeah.
No longer the Matt Cairns rule.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we'll ever find out. I think there will be enough injuries, they'll both be dressed. But.
Yeah, I mean, this team is just so far as... Even if they were healthy, I would say... I wouldn't quite go so far as say they've exceeded expectations. Maybe probably been meeting expectations. Just, you know,
expectations were high, so meeting them is impressive. But
I'd say if everyone else was healthy, they'd probably be about meeting expectations. But just given everything that they've gone through this year, I'd say they're far, far exceeding what's kind of been set out for them. I mean, just to go into some of these games without basically wake up on Friday mornings and not know if someone's going to be healthy, or seeing a guy like Tristan Mullen in a walking boot before a game, and then he comes into the game
and
scores
and is fine,
I mean, this is just really insane. I mean,
if you had told me at the beginning of the season that Haskinen, Donaldson, Green would all miss significant chunks of time, that Andreev was going to be one of their top centers and he would miss chunks of time, that in January we wouldn't know who the starting goalie was, I would not have picked Cornell to be first in the ECAC and in line for a number two or three seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and here we are. Cornell right now sits at number one in the ECAC at 24 points. Next up is Quinnipiac at Cornell 24. Next up is Quinnipiac at 21. Clarkson and Harvard both at 20. Yale, Brown, this coming weekend's opponents at 19 and 17. And then Dartmouth, Union, and the bottom tier. Yeah, I mean, everyone's even in terms of games played. Everyone's at 16 games played. Cornell has a 3-point cushion, which, you know, one weekend can completely change that. But if they keep winning games, and it won't be too easy this coming weekend, even though, you know, maybe in the past couple of years, Yale and Brown have gotten overlooked. They're doing really well this year, and especially as of late. I mean, this is just...
Yeah, Brown, who knew?
They're
good.
They're really, really exceeding expectations. I mean, some people would say they're meeting expectations, but... They beat Quinnipiac.
Really solid win over Quinnipiac.
Really solid win over Quinnipiac. And, you know, just following some of the people around the Twitter sphere, shout out Josh Sagan, you know, Brown is really looking to make a statement Friday night to show that the win over Quinnipiac was not some type of fluke, and that they're here to stay and maybe compete for a first round bye in the ECAC tournament.
Yeah, that could be a big game. For what it's worth, in the top 20 in the national rankings right now, you've got 5 ECAC teams.
Wow.
In addition to Cornell at number 8, there's Quinnipiac, who's 6th, Clarkson's 11, and Harvard and Union are 18th and 20th, respectively. And Yale and Brown, Cornell's opponents this weekend, are receiving votes. They're just
receiving
outside
votes.
The top 20.
Yes.
So these are, you know, these teams this weekend are ones really trying to push themselves into the tournament conversation, too.
Yeah. And I mean, that's pretty crazy, because... Even though there's 5 teams in the top 20, I still feel like Cornell, I still feel like there's still a big gap between some of these other divisions and ECAC. Like even Denver, which is only ranked 7th, like I don't know how I'd feel about Cornell.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because, I mean, it could very well be just because we're around the team so much that like, and these guys, like Denver and these programs are supposed to be very like world renowned to a certain extent.
Yeah, we never actually see them play, but it's like, oh, Denver, St. Cloud, right.
I don't know about Ohio State. I don't know how much I believe in them. And they've got a pretty good record, though. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like...
Who's the football coach who said you are who your record says you are? Is that a Bill Parcells thing or something?
Probably.
Yeah, because it's true.
Well, kind of looking at Brown, that's a complete opposite. I actually meant to ask Schaefer about this today, but complete opposite. He always says they're better than what their record shows. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe this year he'd say they're better appropriate.
Well, I would say maybe Quinnipiac's a little worse than their excellent record shows.
Yeah. Well,
time will tell.
Circling back a little bit, you know, kind of this is a home stretch, only six more regular season games, presumably a bye week, playoff series, presumably Lake Placid, and then presumably the NCAA tournament.
It's going to be a busy month of March.
It's going to be a busy month.
If things go as planned for
Brian. And we're kind of getting into a to watching period, you know, scoreboard watching, pairwise watching, things like that. So, you know, College Hockey News has their Monte Carlo simulations where today was actually the first one for the upcoming NCAA tournament. And Cornell is at number 8 in the pairwise, but in these projections they have Cornell as the number 9 most likely team to make the NCAA. Well, they have them ranked number 9, but they have a 94% chance to make the NCAA tournament if things were to end today. Or not things run today, but in all simulations that have been run, given
if things ended today, they would be in the tournament. Yeah.
Right. So pretty much a more looking at the 5 to 11 seed range. That's a big range. Maybe the 7 to 11 seed range for Cornell is what you'd be looking at
now. Which make them a 2 or 3.
To make them a 2 and 3 in one regional.
And as we saw last year, once you're in this tournament, it doesn't really matter what seed you're in.
Well, I don't know. A lot of people were upset getting BU last year, basically in BU's hometown.
Yeah, but so fair enough. But as we saw, you know, Cornell was a one seed and lost. There are enough good teams in college hockey, and that time of year, the top 16 are all good enough that I think once you're in, the seeding is not hugely important.
Right. So if we were to, as per this simulation, Penn State would be the last team. In not counting, not considering league champions or anything,
right? Because the Atlantic Hockey,
right. And but in we could get 1, 2, 3, 4 ECAC teams in the tournament in Quinnipiac, Cornell, Harvard, and Clarkson, which I think would be pretty good, especially pretty good for Harvard after
their abysmal season last year. Quinnipiac, Clarkson, and Cornell are almost locks. If not, I mean, Quinnipiac, I think is a lock. So there'll be 3 for sure. And there could be up to 3 to 5. I'd be very surprised if there were 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's pretty. I would even be surprised if there were 5. I don't know
it's 3 or 4.
I don't know if Union can pull it out. I think even 4, I would be a little surprised. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. Cornell.
Well, right now, Harvard, that wouldn't be a huge shock.
No, Harvard would be. Yeah, I guess 4. I guess 4 would be.
Plus, yeah, a team like Dartmouth could conceivably go to on a run.
Yeah, Dartmouth is always. I feel like Dartmouth is like the Cincinnati Bengals of the ECAC. They're always like.
What, they lose every season and never fire their coach?
Well, no. Everyone loves that. Their coach seems nice. He seems fine.
I have no issues. Didn't they just fire him, though?
No, he's been there a while.
We're talking about Cincinnati.
Oh, Cincinnati. Oh, well, I was saying in terms of like they're always like right there, but never just they're like.
Oh no, I was just making a joke about football.
Oh, yes. Well, they're like the Bengals. The Dartmouth always seems like they're just kind of there.
I see. Okay.
Like they could if they like went on a bit of a run, but they're always kind of just like stagnant. Who knows? There's still some a lot of hockey left to be played. I guess let's get into this upcoming weekend or.
Yeah, Yale and Brown. Talk about the scouting reports a little bit.
Sure. So Cornell's on the road this weekend, going to Yale, and then to Brown.
Brown and then to Yale.
Brown Friday, Yale Saturday. Gonna be some fun hockey. Brown, like we said, winners of 8 of the last 11 games. Just upset Quinnipiac. Really upset Quinnipiac. I believe it was on the road that they won.
Yeah. Yeah. They played 5 straight on the road and ended that road streak with a 4-2 win over Princeton, who you know was supposed to be really good and wasn't so good, but that's still a good win.
Princeton was Friday.
Friday.
And ended up with Quinnipiac.
Yeah, and Saturday. And Quinnipiac 4-1 on Saturday. Those are two quality league wins.
But I got to give a quick shout-out to Princeton. Their win over Yale on Saturday locked up the Ivy League championship for Cornell this year.
That's right, yeah.
The second straight Ivy League title is in Ithaca. So start calling the local banner makers because we're going streaking. Anyway, looking at Brown, you know.
I don't know if it's a streak until three.
looking at Brown, you know, they have had a bit of an ups and downs season, but they're really getting hot right now. You know, they're led by Tommy Martian. He's kind of got the wide margin in terms of points for the team. Yeah, no, not too wide, but he's got more goals. Actually, he's tied with everyone in goals. He's the point leader, so I'm not wrong about that. Yeah, I mean, they're kind of they got a lot of they got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys in double digits. Points, so they kind of do like to spread the wealth, similar, yeah, similar to Cornell. Depth.
And a young team too. I think some freshmen and sophomores who didn't contribute, well, especially the freshmen, didn't, you know, weren't on the score sheet last year, contributing for the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, they've always kind of been a team that Schaefer mentions as much better than what their record shows. Like usually, especially earlier in the season, you know, kind of the focus, kind of similar to when Harvard and Dartmouth come to town, it's always the focus is on Harvard. And then Dartmouth kind of gets overlooked. It's kind of not to the same extent, just because of all the out of off the rink excitement that goes into Harvard. Does Yale get? You know what I'm trying to say. Brown is similar to Dartmouth in that, you know, kind of Yale always gets circled as a little bit more important matchup. But you know, this weekend it's definitely not. I feel like going to be the same, especially going on the road against each team.
Mm-hmm.
Yale, kind of a different story, where they really go through Joe Snively is basically how their team runs. They're only as successful as he is.
Right. The last time Cornell played Yale at home in November, they beat them 4-2. Both Bulldog goals were on the power play. One of them I recall was a, you know, Snively tip in one of those goals. It's just like impossible to defend. And then the other one was a tough one on the power play too. But Snively. Schaefer told us today, he thinks, today, Tuesday afternoon, he thinks is the best forward in the conference.
Yeah, let's take a listen to what Schaefer has to say about Joe Snively, Yale forward.
You know, it's more of the defenseman's responsibility because, you know, he's probably the best forward in our league at anticipating and taking off out of the defensive zone and getting himself out into space. And when you play against him, you got to keep him in front of you. You got to be aware that he's going to do it. We actually use him as an example a lot of times with our forwards. I'll watch video and say, and this is what I'm talking about, being anticipating, you know, when the puck gets in our hands and where you need to go, and he's good at it. And so our defensemen, you know, a lot of that responsibility is on their shoulders. And he's a great player. You give him time and space, he's going to make things happen. So you got to stay above him and do the job.
And that was head coach Mike Schaefer on what to expect from Yale forward Joe Snively and how they can kind of slow him down. And it'll be definitely a good couple games for a couple teams looking to kind of use Cornell as potentially a leapfrog into a higher seeding, or, you know, kind of send a message to the rest of the league that they're around to play and can play with the best.
Right. And interestingly, yeah, it's a huge game for Yale, who after being swept over the weekend fell into fifth place in the league. They were on a roll for a while and would really like to get back into the top four.
Yeah, up until last weekend, it was basically Yale and Cornell were...
Right, Yale was challenging for the top spot, yeah, and they had fallen quite a bit.
Yeah, so now it's kind of... The tides have changed a little bit, so... Especially for Yale, they're going to be looking to get some momentum going into the postseason. But now I think we'll get into some user...
Let's take some questions,
some listener questions.
Lots of fun stuff on Twitter this week. Thanks, everybody, for submitting. Our first question, this is a fun one. We can you know, look back on our glory days a little bit, Zach.
Yeah.
There's a question. Someone wants to know our favorite memories from having covered Cornell hockey over the years.
Yeah, and that question comes from N. Santa Maria, @NSantam on Twitter. So shout out to you. Her question is, did you already ask it?
I don't know if I read it verbatim, but yeah, it's about our... Our memories, favorite memories covering the team.
Yeah. Let's alternate. So I'll do number three, you do number three.
Okay.
And I'll do number two.
We'll go from, you know, like least big to
big. Yeah, build it up. So I think I'm going to go number three as I'd say probably 2 years ago, since I wasn't at Lake Placid last year, and also wasn't a very good
result.
I'd probably go with Lake Placid 2 years ago when they beat, I believe it was Union in the first round. I'm like 99% sure it was Union. I've watched so many games since then. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they beat Union in the first round and then lost to Harvard in the finals. 4-1 win over Union. That was just, for me personally, super fun. I was a sophomore, finally had a car, could get to Lake Placid. Freshman year, I don't think they made it to Lake. No, they lost to Quinnipiac, didn't make the tournament.
Lake Placid is just so cool.
Yeah,
even going and seeing them lose and whatever. It's just
It's a bit of a selfish. It's a bit of a selfish memory, but I was there and got to see some of the really cool sights. Got to meet some of the writers who I've connected with on Twitter. Again, shout out Josh Sagan. just kind of see the Olympic facilities. I didn't get to go bobsledding, but I got to watch some people go bobsledding at the Olympic Village area. Herb Brooks, beautiful rink. It took me a while to find.
Do you believe in miracles?
It took me a while to find the press box. I like ran around for about a half hour at the concourse level, and finally got up there.
Yeah, that's right. It was sort of tucked away. I remember going to the bathroom or something and getting lost. Yeah.
It was me and just another photographer. So I was basically alone up there in the box, which was kind of cool, just repping the Cornell Sun. Got to go to I think my first formal presser. No, I'd say probably the MSG one, too. It was just a really neat experience from a personal standpoint, even if it ended with a loss to Harvard in the finals.
Yeah. Also, I'll go with my third one. I just, being in Lake Placid, walking around, that's such a cool little village, seeing that rink where you saw it in the movie Miracle on Ice.
So you're doing the same thing.
It's so cool. What?
You're choosing the same thing I said?
No. I'm building up. Okay. We watched Cornell lose to Princeton. It was it sucked for Cornell, but they had already pretty much locked up a number one seed in the NCAA tournament last year, so it wasn't like a hugely consequential game by those metrics. Of course, they want to win the league, so it was this really tough, disheartening loss. For the team, we went back to our little motel type place in the woods in the Adirondacks, which was very beautiful, and we turned on the March Madness game, and it was that historic 16 seed UMBC upsetting of Virginia. We watched it on TV in Lake Placid. There were lots of parallels there. We think of it as the place of crazy crazy upsets. That was a fun weekend.
Yeah. I'm also upset I didn't get to go to the NCAAs with you guys last year.
Yeah, Worcester was a nice little town.
Two years ago, it was in Manchester. I couldn't get anyone to go with me, so I watched from my couch with some friends, which was a bit deflating because I just watched them.
Yeah, they lost 5-0 or something, right?
It was 4-0, 5-0 maybe. Okay. But going back to mine real quick, kind of a sad moment was that... It's a bit of a tangent, but talking about wrestling, Cornell Wrestling, one of my favorite programs on campus. Gabe Dean, two-time national champion, was going for his third national championship, and his match was basically the premier match of the night, so they pushed it to the end. Luckily, the game against Union ended early enough. Harvard ended early enough. This was the finals night. That I got back to my hotel room at Lake Placid to watch it, and I unfortunately saw Gabe Dean lose to Bo Nickel of Penn State. Which was a bit of a sad moment and an otherwise happy weekend. But going to my number two favorite moment, I'd probably say I've had the luxury of being able to go to, and the privilege to be able to go to Madison Square Garden 3 times now to cover the Cornell there. First against UNH, last against BU this year, which was fun, against Harvard. So I feel like it's kind of copping out to put those all into one category. But if I had to pick one moment from those three, I would say it was probably... the first one against UNH, when Alex Router, who's from the New Jersey, New York area, scored a penalty shot at Madison Square Garden in front of tons of friends, fans, and family. That's a bit of a tongue twister. Friends, fans, and family. And that was just super cool. He was super pumped after the game. I mean, to grow up, it wasn't his first time playing there, but,
Who's his NHL team of choice? Rangers Devils?
Pretty sure it's... Well... Now he'll tell you it's the Pittsburgh Penguins because he's in the organization.
Yeah.
Oh, and a little bit of a side note, Trevor Yates was recently traded to the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, and now he's been sent down where Anthony Angelo plays, and now he's been sent down to the Wheeling Nailers where Alex Rauter plays. So those two have reconnected.
That's right.
But yeah, it's probably my number two. What's yours?
It's a quick one because I want to get to my number one, but on the way back from the NCAA tournament in Worcester, it was late at night, and we were in the middle of nowhere and stopped for gas. And we see this big coach bus, and it was the Cornell team, and it was just funny. We had spent weeks, following this team around New York State and the surrounding areas, and to run into them one more time was kind of funny.
Did you guys interact much, or was it kind
of
just let me get
mine? They were kind of on their way out, and we were on the way in, but it was we could tell it was them. It was a silly little thing.
So it wasn't like, hey, tough luck today, or like, see you on campus tomorrow.
No, like, we weren't in the store buying gummy bears at the same time they were leaving.
Oh, man.
It's too bad. It would have been funny if we missed that by just a minute.
Yeah. So my number one pretty easy choice was Alec McRae's game winner with 1.4, 2.3, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah.
Barely any time left against Harvard a couple years ago. I was there. It was one of the most exciting sports moments that I witnessed in person, along with the Cornell football shocking of Colgate, where they came back from, I think it was a 28-3 deficit, or 20-3. You never scored 5 points.
I'm not sure you got a safety.
I think it was 28-5 because I think they did score a safety.
Okay.
But yeah, that was just like, I don't think there's anything that can really match that in my time. I mean, that's
the McRae goal.
Football thing. Oh yeah, that was pretty good too. But yeah, I mean, that's that McRae goal is probably like the goal that's gonna be on like banner photos, and that's one day probably gonna get like painted on a wall in line of rank or something like that.
Yeah, that was a special moment. And
all right, what's your number one?
I really enjoyed seeing the playoff series in the UCAC quarterfinals at Lina Rink last season against Quinnipiac. There was that huge 9-1 win the first game. And then the second game especially, I really enjoyed. It was this intense battle. Cornell lost two players to, game misconduct penalties. It was hard fought, intense. Goleta got the shutout. I think it was a 2-0 game. And then afterwards, I remember, right at the final horn, watching Alex Rauter, the captain, in his final game at Lina, just sort of standing on the ice for an extra second, soaking it all in. It was this really beautiful imagery. Mm-hmm. And it was an exciting moment for this team too, which was on fire heading to Lake Placid.
Yeah.
The arena, arena was buzzing.
I also miss that. I was gone. I wasn't here during that. But yeah, so that was a good fun question. A little
That was a good one. Nostalgic. Talk about ourselves a little bit. That's always fun for us.
Yeah, easy for most.
What's your favorite non-Cornell sports moment you've seen?
I was at when the Caps won the Stanley Cup last year. I obviously wasn't in Vegas, but I went to Verizon Capital One Center just to watch it on the big screen outside, which was really fun. So that was definitely pretty cool. I think I saw Steven Strasburg's debut the Nats. See maybe a couple of buzzer beaters or something. I don't know. I've never been to a full-fledged NFL game. I've never been to a regular season one. It was fun at the moment, but I saw Lucas Giolito make his Nats debut, but now he sucks and he's not even on the Nats anymore, so that wasn't too fun. What about you?
Well, that's a tough one. I'm a Minnesota fan, so I don't have many positive memories.
Were you not in New Orleans last year for the Minnesota Miracle?
No, I was home.
Was that in Minnesota?
I wasn't at the game. Yeah, that's a great memory. I know my least favorite, like most vivid memory, I went to that game outside. It was like 10 degrees below zero, so
that's
tickets
so
were cheap.
That's really
my friend and I were in high school and were silly enough to go, and that was such a wonderful and heartbreaking experience.
Yeah, it's really bad. All right, so let's
I saw a no-hitter once. That was cool.
That's really cool. Who's good?
Yeah. Mike Fiers. Journeyman guy, like
hit
number
John
three,
Carlos
four
Stan
starter.
Hit Giancarlo Stan in the face.
Oh, did he? Yikes. Yeah. That was cool. Yeah, the no-hitter. Yeah, I've only seen one no-hitter.
All right, let's move on to our...
sorry, I took us... I took us way off there.
Yeah, that's fine. It's building the rapport with the listeners.
That's right, exactly. All 15 of you.
Our next question comes from L rank 70, Lina rank 70.
Was Lina rank 1 through 69 taken?
I don't know, maybe 70 is kind of a common goalie number. L rank 70 would like to, is said, I'd like to hear a discussion of ticket prices at Lina. Attendance is down and the easiest fix would be to decrease prices.
I accept the premise of the question. I'm not sure that I accept the user, the listener's answer to the question.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, across the country, people are a little less interested in attending sporting events these days. Maybe there's more to do, you know, other choices. Maybe it's cultural norms changing. But tickets right now aren't that expensive. I'm not discounting that it's a financial burden for people, but I think, yeah, you could discount them by a few dollars, but I'm not short of making it like free for students, which is probably unfeasible, though not a ridiculous idea. I'm not sure that cutting prices is the solution.
Yeah, I don't know if cutting prices is the answer either, although I'm sure no one would really be too objective to that, or object to that. I do think that, you know, a lot of times when there is an attendance problem, it is kind of custom for the team just to kind of shove it off onto the fans. Like, oh, why aren't you guys coming here? Well, you know, maybe fans, well, I think fans definitely could be a little bit better in attendance and in getting involved in the games, chants, whatever.
Also, I mean, there were 4,000 fans at the games this weekend.
Right, that was which not is a good.
Bad crowd by any stretch.
But I just kind of reject the tendency to kind of shove the onus onto the fans. While there is definitely some betterment that the or improvements the fans could be making, I think it extends past hockey. I just think teams are not marketed very well here.
And I don't know here at Cornell, students don't know when there are games. They should send an email or something.
I don't know who is in charge of marketing. I don't want to call anyone out or anything. But you know, I just think that there's a lot that can be done. You know, simple things such as I think, you know, you see that UMass the other day, the head coach of their program, which, you know, hasn't been really a national talking point, and now kind of really elevated themselves to top five this year, number one at one point.
Home of Ryan Bliss.
New home of Ryan Bliss. You know, I saw a video of their head coach just kind of out on the streets handing out pizza to fans waiting in line to get into the game. And, you know, maybe with the way Cornell does things, it's not really feasible. I know that, you know, they're at the rink pretty early. But, you know, I do think that there needs to be a little bit more buy-in from maybe the program. Their social media presence has been pretty non-existent overall. It's kind of been changing. Strangely enough, it's like this past weekend is the first time I've ever seen at CU Big Red Hockey Live tweet a game.
Yeah, although, I mean, I don't think that's really the
I don't know. I don't think that's the end-all
like
be-all.
In townies, to use the perhaps derogatory term, I don't think like Twitter is what gets them in the doors.
That's
if we're talking about
that's
students,
fair.
Maybe.
That's fair. But, you know, even, like, support from the university, from the administration, when's the last time you, like, felt Cornell actually, like, promoting its sporting events outside of, like, the actual, like, Cornell, like, the athletics office or
the university? Yeah, sure.
I mean, I saw a tweet the other day that was, like, the Northeastern, when they were at the Beanpot playing Boston College, there was just, like, tweets all over from at Northeastern, at whatever their main username is. Just, like, I've never seen... The only time I ever see Cornell at Cornell tweet anything, you know, is like this weekend when they clinched the Ivy title. That's when I saw something. And, you know, I'm not saying like if Cornell were to tweet a few more things, I would change everything. I just feel like it just shows how little of a buy-in there is from a lot of actors on campus. And, you know, even then, I don't know exactly how it can improve. I honestly thought they kind of tried to do something different this weekend that I'd never seen before with the drum line before the game.
Yeah, I did not like that.
That's, I thought it was
that's something to discuss another time.
You weren't there on Friday. On Friday, it was really lackluster. They were just kind of behind the glass. They went in the stands on
and
Saturday.
Saturday wasn't lackluster.
I thought it was much better. But even Brandon and I were talking during the game. He was like,
no, fine, it was better, but...
Okay, yeah, that also...
I'm a purist. I like, leave the lights on, play the song, take the... It's okay.
I thought it was kind of cool. They would skate.
I appreciate the effort. Try something new.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
But just like, you know, that's like the first time since I've been here that I've even seen them try something. Like, I've never actually seen them really do anything different. And I know that Cornell's culture is that fact that it's pretty traditional, you know.
And that's the rink, too.
Right. It is. Lina does have restrictions in and of itself. But I would like to see a little bit more changes, a little bit more just initiative from some members of the program. I mean, yeah, we can only do so much as the reporters. And it's tough because we're the only ones covering the team. You know, Ithaca, ESPN Ithaca comes sometimes, and some other publications make their way. But
yeah, sure.
On a weekly basis, right, us at the Daily Sun are pretty much the only publication giving anyone daily, weekly coverage.
Sure. And, you know, just for what it's worth, to contribute to this discussion, Cornell has excellent attendance numbers, and yeah, I don't know how you measure this, but some of the best fans in college hockey, too.
Everyone's
numbers are down a tiny bit. I don't think there's reason to like panic and
go
crazy.
No, I agree. And you know, a lot of the opposing teams say how much they either enjoy or don't enjoy coming to Lina Rink just based on the fans, right, and the cheers and stuff like that. So I do think, you know, there's not really reason to panic, but you know, maybe there's a little cause for concern going forward, and maybe us millennials, Gen Z, whatever, just don't like leaving the house anymore. I know ESPN Plus has made a lot of people kind of reconsider their, not a lot of people, but some people reconsider their season tickets.
Yeah.
Just,
I don't know if that's students, though. Like,
not students.
I mean, students don't watch the games on TV. They either go or...
Yeah, but I mean, right. I assume the question is also asking about just townies in general, right, attendance.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, no.
Yeah, maybe you go to a game or two and watch the others on TV.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how things progress. You know, you might not like the drum line, but I kind of like the message behind it that it was sending. But yeah, I guess that's all we got this week on the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast. Cornell's off to Yale and Brown this weekend. New Haven and Providence.
Two big ones. Yeah,
two big ones.
Earlier in the season, we wouldn't have expected Yale and Brown to be like a huge, big time. I feel like I say this every week. Yeah, we didn't expect it to be an important weekend like it is.
Yeah.
I guess it's always important in the ECAC, especially in February. But
well, this is ECAC hockey. Any team can beat any team.
Yeah.
We don't overlook anything.
Yeah. That's right. It's the annoying cliche sports athlete talk, but it's true also.
Yeah, well, no matter what happens this weekend in New Haven and Providence, we'll be sure to discuss
it. Two nice
it.
Towns.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been to New Haven, not New Providence. It's okay.
We went to New Haven.
Yeah.
Good pizza.
Yeah. Except you had a sinus infection. I
couldn't taste it at all. No matter what happens this coming weekend for Cornell Hockey, we'll be sure to discuss it on the next edition of the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast. Thanks for listening, and good evening, hockey fans.